You're listening to the Recovered Life Show, the show that helps people in recovery live their best recovered lives. And here is your host, Damon Frank.
And welcome back to the Recovered Life Show. I'm pleased to welcome our guest therapist, Keith Kilborn, to the show. He's a therapist in Petaluma, California, and also a person who practices Tai Chi. And I'm so glad to have you on the show, Keith, to talk about Tai Chi and how it can help you in your recovery.
Well, happy to be here.
So great to have this conversation, Keith. You know, one of the things that I love is that when I interview mental health professionals that are also in recovery, and you are in recovery, you know, 33 years, you have been doing the deal. And I love to kind of dive into, you know, what did you do? How did you use certain things, right, in your life? Yeah. To help you not only stay sober, Keith, because I think that's one side of it, the physical sobriety, but to really have your best recovered life, right? Because that's really what it's all about. So I'm so thrilled to talk with you about your whole Tai Chi journey, how it worked. Can we dive into this a little bit? You know, how did you, just being, you know, somebody who's living in Petaluma, doing the sobriety journey, stumble upon Tai Chi?
Well, you know, I think I got very lucky, you know, and as a child of the 60s, by the 70s, I was going to graduate school at Sonoma State. Somebody that I knew a little bit was teaching Tai Chi. And, you know, this is like, I don't know, 1974 or something. You know, it's weird. It's lunatic fringe. It's this, you know, what is that weird stuff people are doing? And why are they moving in slow motion? And you know, there were so many questions at that point. But something about it appealed to me enough that not only did I, you know, take the class, but I was motivated to practice every day and did. And I think because right off the bat, I was getting benefits in terms of relaxation and a sense of innate well-being and these kind of things that at the time didn't always translate into words, but I liked the feeling. And so I kept doing it.
You know, I'd love to ask you, because I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this, Keith, and they're saying, what? OK, I've heard of Tai Chi. What is it? Is it a martial art? Is it a dance? Is it meditation? What exactly is Tai Chi? Just to kind of set the stage, because I think a lot of people have misconceptions about actually what it is.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that what you listed are the three things that we usually say, and it's all of the above. It is a dance. It is a moving meditation. What was the other thing you said?
Martial arts.
Yeah. It does have applicability as a martial art. And, you know, you had raised the question of, so what's different about Tai Chi, say, from other forms of meditation? Well, there's a couple of things. One is that your eyes are open. And so in addition to, you know, cultivating this inner sense of well-being, you're doing it while being aware of your entire surroundings. And that's very different from most forms of meditation where your eyes are closed. It's very inward focus. And so to be able to have this peacefulness as you move through the world, maybe in slow motion, but, you know, the meditation and action concept, when you're thinking of it in terms of Tai Chi, is, well, you're walking down the street and, hey, this could be doing Tai Chi if you think about it in the right way. And the neuroscience has been quite wonderful in supporting mindfulness practices, because focusing on your breathing, which is part of Tai Chi and part of other forms of meditation, we now know that you do that for 15 or 20 minutes, and the limbic area, the emotional area of the brain, gets very subdued. So you're not as emotionally reactive. And the prefrontal cortex is stimulated, which is your thinking, analyzing, being aware, observing, doing all of that is getting more energy. And that happens from focusing on one's breathing. It also happens from slow motion movement. So with Tai Chi, you got two things going that are going to send you to that same place.
I love that. You know, when I first heard about Tai Chi is when I was practicing martial arts. And at that time was not sober, right? Uh-huh. And people were talking about, hey, you know, this will really calm you down. This will stop the fast thinking, the constant movement that I had, right? And, you know, and I know for me personally, alcohol was great because it allowed me to kind of turn off. It allowed me to stop thinking as much, mm-hmm. overthinking and doing all that stuff. In your recovery journey, how did you incorporate Tai Chi into that? Like, how was that? Because I know you've mentioned that it was kind of a game changer for you. How did you do that? Did you start noticing the benefits of it in the recovery process? Or was it something that you just stumbled upon accidentally?
Well, it happened kind of in reverse from a lot of people, in that I had been exposed and taking classes in meditation and Tai Chi long before I got sober. I think it was Stan Grof's wife who talked about, I had all these spiritual practices, but I was also drinking myself to death, and I eventually had to deal with that aspect of it. So she's another one I relate to, because, you know, she had the spiritual practice, but I'm also an alcoholic, oops. when I did get sober, it's like I say, gosh, I have these practices that make me feel good and almost come in as a replacement for drinking alcohol or doing something else that's mind-altering, that I have this practice that is very safe and healthy, and also is mind-altering in the way that I'm looking for, to be more relaxed, to be more in touch with my innate well-being.
You know what? It's interesting because, you know, I think so much of the whole getting sober journey is really about, you know, it's about self-awareness. And you're talking about people being really heavily into that spiritual side. And I found through just being sober and meeting people like you that are in recovery, and just the experience of being sober, people that are in recovery are usually spiritual seekers. Not everybody, but I find that, like, when you really talk to them, they, even before they were sober, were kind of seekers. They were pursuing and trying to access the spiritual journey. And I've heard this more than once, of people kind of having that, the spiritual journey, creating the self-awareness of, I'm drinking myself to death. I can no longer use drugs. I can't, you know, gamble like this, or eat like whatever that addiction might be, right? Hmm. This self-awareness ability. Do you find that Tai Chi helps you with that? Because really, at the end of the day, isn't it, like, as a therapist too, as a mental health professional, isn't a lot of recovery just self-awareness? Is just, well, becoming aware of what is actually going on with you?
I think that's a fair characterization. Self-awareness, and I would also say spiritual awareness, whatever that means, because it, you know, it means a different thing to each individual, almost. Having these practices going made me, I think, more open to other forms of spiritual practice as well. So that what actually got me sober was my involvement with a Native American shaman. And that's not the typical story, you know. but the I think the fact that I had these other practices going already made me open to at least meeting her. And then once I met her, going, oh, I think this is the answer to the question I couldn't ask. You know, this is the journey that I need to go on right now. And it was, you know, through that relationship that within a year, I got sober and still am. And so I see the other practices like Tai Chi being in support of that, that it made me at least open enough that I could see the value of another spiritual path.
What do you think, you know, with somebody who's been sober for 33 years, that's a long time, right?
Mm.
What do you think the key has been for you? I mean, obviously I could tell, you know, just by our conversation, you're very into spirituality, you know, obviously Tai Chi. I'm sure you also do meditation. What do you think has been the key core that's really helped you stay sober for 33 years?
Yeah. Daily practice. I mean, I meditate every day. I do Tai Chi every day. At this point, because I'm an old guy with you know, arthritis and the things that old people get, I also do yoga every day. So I have, you know, three practices going on a daily basis. And then in addition to that, I'm still involved as a Vision Quest guide, which is a whole nother kind of launching yourself into the spirit world in I would say almost an aggressive way. You know, like we're going to go out in the mountains and we're going to sit there and fast and pray and hope that something magical happens.
For all of you Recovered Life Show listeners who've battled in sobriety and are ready to level up, listen up. I'm offering a week of my accountability coaching absolutely free. This isn't just about day-to-day survival. It's about aggressively propelling your life forward. Whether you're new to sobriety or have been sober for years and are struggling to elevate your life, I'm going to be your partner for a week and help you get on track and start living the recovered life you deserve. We're not just talking about setting goals here. We're going to pursue real, tangible breakthroughs in your personal and business life. This is more than recovery. It's about owning your path and seizing the greatness you're destined for. But hurry, spaces are limited. Don't wait. Go to DamonFrank.com and claim your free week and start your journey. It's time to transform survival into thriving. Visit DamonFrank.com and book your free week now.
And most of the time, something magical does happen.
You know, I think this whole thing about pursuit, you know, I remember first coming into a 12-step program and hearing this, that, you know, in the big book saying that the pursuit basically is never going to end. That there has to constantly be some sort of spiritual pursuit in order for you to maintain a happy sobriety, right? I know there's a lot of people who are in sobriety that aren't happy. They're miserable, right? Which I don't think is really the answer, right?
No.
And I love Tai Chi as, and why I was excited to do this episode is because I love Tai Chi as kind of a gateway into something new, right?
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I wanted to talk about in this is this whole idea of using Tai Chi to kind of stay in the present. Because one of the things that I have seen with people who are constant relapsers are people who have a really hard time maintaining physical sobriety for a period of time. They can never just kind of get into it, right? Mm. It's almost like a failure to launch into sobriety. Typically, a lot of times I see is that they have a really hard time being able to stay in the present. The present is just such a uncomfortable place. And when you hear these stories of people going out constantly, usually they're going out because they're in the past tense, they have a resentment, or they're future tripping. They're never really in the here and now. Do you find that Tai Chi kind of helps that practice with being comfortable with the here and now? Because this is a huge problem for people, especially in early recovery, just being able to be comfortable with where they're at.
Yeah. Well, I think you're onto something there, that it's a focus of awareness that is part of the Tai Chi practice, where because there is a martial arts aspect to it, you know, in martial arts, you better be in the moment or you get smacked. Yeah. Now, there isn't sparring, so to speak, in Tai Chi, but there's still that idea that you better be totally aware of your environment, because you don't know what might be coming at you. And myself and several people have reported to me that they were in situations that were threatening, perhaps even life-threatening, and because of their Tai Chi practice, they were able to just relax. And that oftentimes, you know, it's our resistance that creates the most problems. If we could just relax and be in the moment, like you say, well, maybe this is not such a bad situation. Or at least I can make it less bad if I'm actually in present time. Because as you say, you know, the future tripping, which creates anxiety, and the past tripping, which creates depression, are big problems in recovery. If we could simply stay in this moment and be taking care of this moment. I think it's also helped me as a grandfather, that I really love kids under the age of 5. I love going to playgrounds with my grandkids, because they are in the moment. Yeah. And when I'm playing with them, I get to be in the moment. And it's another way of transferring that focused awareness into something that's just fun and games.
You know what? It you know, so many people now, Keith, come into recovery, and there's been, you know, what I've seen in the last, since I've been in the last 3 decades, is I've seen a shift towards more mental health into recovery. You know, I know when I first came in, it was not, I'm going to say, not as nice. You know, people were much more direct. People would just, they just tell you, you know, like, and there wasn't a bigger, at least where, you know, the people that I surrounded myself with, there wasn't as much of a mental health discussion. And now I, you know, we've done a lot of shows with therapists about people coming in with co-occurring disorders. They maybe have a mood disorder, you know, crippling anxiety, crippling depression.
Oh yeah.
Other PTSD. Things, you know? Yeah. PTSD, all, you know, and, you know, trauma is the big, you know, thing. Now they're thinking that trauma is linked to a lot of the addiction that's out there. And, you know, I find it interesting now that we're really kind of having, and I think it's great, we're having this bigger mental health discussion. I know I had a crippling anxiety attack, and I remember reading in the Big Book, the founder of the Big Book, if anybody's listening to this, it's not familiar with that, you know, had a crippling, depression issue, right? And he's talking about basically a mood disorder within there. And how do you feel that Tai Chi kind of helps with those two issues? Because there's so many people that come in that have either anxiety or depression or both of those, right? And an addiction. How does Tai Chi really help in that practice of kind of knocking down some of those issues with depression and anxiety?
Yeah, well, you know, fundamentally, we all just want to feel good. You know, that's why people drink. That's why people use drugs. There's a certain way of wanting to feel, and that if that can be created, as I think it is, by something like Tai Chi, then you've got at least something that's going to cut into those other co-occurring disorders. That it will take the edge off the anxiety, it will take the edge off the depression, and the more that you practice, and it expands out into. I think that we talked about Tai Chi as dance, which is an art form, and that artistic expression is one of the things that I think is really an important part of recovery as well. And sometimes that's about traumatic things in our past, and sometimes it's just about going off into the imaginal realm and having a good time and being able to do that, not being held back by things within our own psyche that prevent that from happening. So I think that practices like Tai Chi enable that, make it possible to move more easily into the imaginal realm and just, have some fun, enjoy life.
I love that. I love that, because that's been something that's really been, that I've really been thinking about. Like, everybody has these little goals, sobriety goals for the year, reflections. I don't necessarily call them goals, but just reflections on things that I would like to kind of focus on. And for me, for every year, for the last couple of years, it's like, I want to have more fun. I want to have more fun in my life, right? And because with being sober, you realize you have the ability to do that. But I think, we've been talking a lot lately, Keith, about people who, they come into recovery. I call it church basement thinking. They just get trapped in the church basement, right? And thank God they're sober, right? Like, because you have to have physical sobriety or none of this is really going to work, right? You're always going to, I find you're always going to be sliding backwards, two steps forward, five steps back, right? So it's awesome that if you have, physical sobriety, that's good. But kind of getting stuck there, it's like, well, I'm afraid to make a move. I'm afraid to do this. And, and I found with especially these co-occurring disorders, so many times now, it's just a rush to put people on medication, so they could get a foothold. That, and look, and everybody's different. And I think that that's great for some people. And I think it works for some, obviously it works, or they wouldn't be doing it all the time. But I think this ability to be able to use other things to just get kind of I look at it like rock climbing, just a grasp, right? Because I knew for me with sobriety, if I could just get to a place where I could have a little buffer, I could then start working the tools. Right. I could then start working the tools. Same with anxiety. Like, that's how I got over anxiety, is I just was able to get enough of a buffer. And, using things like Tai Chi and using things like this, I feel kind of gets you out of these jams that really maybe your traditional sobriety, practice, you might get out of it sober, but you're not going to get out of it happy. Right. You're gonna get out of it, right? Is there been a time in your life, like thinking back, Keith, like the worst time in your life in recovery? How did you get out of it using these kind of practices, or did you?
That's a fascinating question, because when I think about the worst times in my life, of course, I immediately go to the period of time before I stopped drinking, like being depressed for 3 years and not able to get myself out of it. And I think that what I came up with around depression is just do something. What gets really bad about depression is the vegetative aspect, where we get so depressed that we're just stuck and there's no movement. And so when I say, don't just sit there, do something, well, Tai Chi works very well because, and better, I think, than sitting meditation, because it's not clear in sitting meditation whether you're doing something or not. It sort of looks like you're doing nothing. But at least with Tai Chi, it not only looks but feels like, yeah, I am doing something. I am in motion. And for the 20 minutes, 30 minutes, however long that I'm in the practice, I'm not depressed. Maybe, you know, afterwards the depression comes back, but it's not quite as bad as it was.
So if there's somebody listening to this and they're maybe struggling in their recovery and they just really have not been able to get into a meditative practice, they haven't been able to really kind of find anything, what would be your thoughts to them about Tai Chi? And maybe they've looked into it a little bit. They're a little apprehensive because it seems a little woo-woo. You know, it might seem a little out there. And they have some apprehension to it, but they know they need something in addition to their regular recovery practice. What would be your advice to them about trying Tai Chi?
I would actually say start with Qigong, because they're part of the same practice, basically. When I was taking Tai Chi lessons from this man, Nam Seng, a number of years ago, he had spent part of his childhood in the Taoist monastery in Taiwan. So he had a very interesting, different background from most Tai Chi teachers. He was really steeped in the Taoist tradition. God, now I forgot your question.
No, it's okay. Oh, about if they're apprehensive about doing it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we would do a series of exercises before we got into the Tai Chi form itself. And that was where I first heard the term Qigong. We did Qigong as warm-ups for doing Tai Chi. So now I see that people are teaching Qigong on its own, which is fine, which is beautiful. It's like, make it accessible. It is more accessible than learning a 37 movement form or a 108 movement form or an 88 movement form. You know, Qigong is individual exercises, and you can learn 4, 5, 6 of them, 10 or 12. And it's a good practice, and you can do it for a few minutes and get the same kind of benefits that we're talking about with Tai Chi. So, that would be my advice, is that's the place to start. And if you really love it, then you'll probably go on and learn a Tai Chi form as well.
You know, I think that's really great advice. I think just to be a pursuer and to try that, you know, and to try it out if it works for you. Because like after this conversation, I'm looking at it as somebody who is a horrible meditator, and the person who teaches me how to meditate says, you can't say that. You got to stop saying that. You're not doing it wrong, right? But like, I'm somebody who is kind of an into action person, right, Keith? So I'm like, I just don't, this is very difficult for me. Like being able to pause, very difficult. I'm somebody who likes movement,
yeah,
right? So this is something that I see is something that I need to incorporate in 2024 into my practice. You know, Keith, I have to ask you, because you're a very interesting guy, therapist. So you've gone down the whole mental health science side of it, the practitioner side of it. You've had your own personal recovery journey, Tai Chi, Qigong, meditation. I have to ask you in closing here, what has been the biggest spiritual lesson that you've learned in your recovery? I know that's a tough question, but if you're to think about like something that you've learned that has been the big aha moment in your recovery, what would that be?
Well, we haven't talked at all about prayer, and in the quest context, prayer is really like, lay it on me, you know, just tell me who I'm supposed to be, what I'm supposed to do, and the most dramatic thing that I was led into as a result of that practice, was going to Ukraine to start a Vision Quest program over there. And, you know, I got together with a couple of folks over there who were interested in doing it and knew the country a heck of a lot better than I did. And we got a program going, and it's still going. I mean, they did a journey in the Carpathian Mountains last summer, in spite of the war and everything. And I would say, when you launch yourself into the unknown, so to speak, you know, going to a place you've never been, going to do something you've never done before, it can be amazingly magical. And all of the practices to keep us in touch with spirit help us to do those things and make them awesome. So that's what comes to, you know, as an example of something pretty big that, you know, ended up with me going to Ukraine seven times between 2002 and 2012, and, you know, falling in love with the people there, falling in love with the country. And I think, you know, there's no way that I would have been doing that if I hadn't been doing these other practices to kind of prepare me and get over the anxiety of getting on an airplane and flying halfway across the world, just for starters. Like, you know, I went, okay, I guess this is going to be good. You know, tell me it's going to be good, or tell me if it's not, and I'll run away. And, you know, and it worked, and it worked. And I think all of the practices contribute to us doing new things, amazing things, awesome things. It's really the growing edge of being in recovery.
Love that. This has been a great episode, Keith. Thank you so much for coming on, guys. We're going to put links of how you can get a hold of Keith about his practice and everything about him in the show notes. So you can go ahead and click on those. And we're definitely going to have you back, Keith, and talk about prayer too, because I think that is such a key thing, and also misunderstood, I think, a lot too in recovery. Mm. Keith, thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me and inviting me, and good to get to know you a little bit.
Sometimes addiction recovery can be a lonely battle, but you don't have to fight it alone. At Recovered Life, we're dedicated to helping you live your best recovered life. And that's why we're inviting you to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. Every week, we carefully curate exclusive content from leading minds in addiction recovery, mental health, and all things important to the recovery lifestyle. Stay in the know with the latest news about addiction and get exclusive invitations to special recovery-focused events and explore insights tailored to support recovery from alcoholism, drug addiction, codependency, disordered eating, dysfunctional family dynamics, gambling, and so much more. With our newsletter, each week becomes an opportunity for growth, healing, and taking a step closer to the life you deserve. Take your first step towards a brighter future today. Go to recoveredlife.us and subscribe for free. Sign up now at recoveredlife.us.